There we go. Okay, great. So today, thank you for that introduction. Today, I'm going to talk a little bit about supplements and supplement safety. So this is a really huge topic, and we could talk for hours and hours about supplements and supplement safety. So what I've tried to do is try to narrow it down into things that you guys are going to be running into for the most part in high school and middle school and more so in college, but just try to hit on some high points for you guys with that. So my first step is to define what a supplement is, and this is a really surprisingly challenging thing to do. So I took this definition from the IOC position stand on supplements, and so that's a really good place to start if you're interested in finding out what supplements are out there, what works, what doesn't, what's the research behind it. And so that's kind of where I'm basing a lot of this presentation off of. But really, it's a food component nutrient, right? So it's a single nutrient, it's multiple nutrients, it's multiple foods put together. Ingested in addition to the consumed diet, and so that's something to point out too, is that supplements are meant to be added on to the diet, right? They cannot replace your diet in achieving a specific health and or performance benefit. So what kinds of, or you know, how do we kind of define our different types of supplements? So the first is functional foods, and those are foods that have been kind of fortified or have added nutrients back into them. So thinking kind of along the lines of like almond milks or rice milks that are fortified with calcium and vitamin D, or orange juices, things like that. We have formulated foods, and so those are going to be things like your recovery bars or Gatorades or your carbohydrate gels. So those are kind of convenient forms of nutrition. Single nutrients, so things like protein powders, protein isolates, creatine, or herbal products, you know, like green tea extract, things like that. And then the multi-ingredient products are things like your pre-workout. So you're combining a bunch of things together to get that added effect. Okay, so the first kind of subgenre that I want to start with is your supplements to treat deficiency. And so I've picked four, and these are the nutrients that we find are most commonly deficient in our youth athletes or in any athletes. And so the first one's vitamin D. And so there's been a lot of new research on vitamin D, a lot of hype around vitamin D. Everybody's deficient, right? And so the thing is, we're not really certain, or we haven't really decided on a good vitamin D marker that's truly indicative of true vitamin D status. So we're still working on that. Right now, we've got some general guidelines. Typically, what we see is indoor athletes are going to be a little bit more vitamin D deficient, right? So we make vitamin D in our skin. We can get it from our diet, but the majority, we're gonna take the sunlight, right? And it's going to take the cholesterol and turn it into vitamin D. And so our indoor athletes aren't getting as much sunlight, right? So they're not going to be making as much vitamin D. Athletes with darker skin tones. So ethnicity is going to affect your vitamin D level as well. And then if you live in a northern latitude, so we're lucky, we live in a place where we get a lot of sunlight. So outdoor athletes may be less likely to be vitamin D deficient, although we do still see it in some of our football players and things like that, if they're really covered up or they're wearing a lot of sunscreen. So we have just kind of basic levels, blood levels for vitamin D. These are good things to check if you can with your PCP, or if you have a kid that's getting a lot of stress fractures or just dealing with a lot of injuries that way, that might be something to look into. And we can dose vitamin D in somewhat large doses because it is fat soluble, but we also want to monitor toxicity. So there is an upper limit, and so we want to make sure, you know, the common ones that we're looking at are 50,000 IUs, a really large bolus dose over a couple of weeks, or sorry, a couple of months, and then, or we're going to give a little bit less for a few weeks. And so, but really, vitamin D is kind of a hard one, but it's something that more and more people are starting to look into and tie into things. And so there's been some studies with NFL, most prominently, where they've seen that their vitamin deficient athletes are more likely to be injured than those who had adequate levels of vitamin D. And so things to think about. Iron is the next one. And so iron is typically thought of as a more of a female athlete's kind of deficiency. And for the most part, that's true. Occasionally, we do see iron deficiencies in some of our younger male athletes, especially our endurance runners, things like that. So blood markers are gonna be a little bit more difficult to identify, and so it's gonna take maybe a couple different tests to determine that it actually is iron deficiency. and I'm sure your sports med stocks are all on top of that. Things to do for deficiency. So obviously we can increase iron-rich foods like red meats. If they are vegetarian, this is pretty common to be iron deficient. So even cooking things in a cast iron skillet can kind of help with their iron intake, or black shot molasses, or you know, we can always do the supplementation. Ferrous sulfate is gonna be one of our more readily available iron supplements. And this may take a couple months to kind of get out of iron deficiency. Calcium and vitamin B12. So calcium, obviously we know is essential for bone health. There's not a really good indicator of calcium levels in the blood. Sometimes we can do bone scans, but even those aren't super indicative. We can supplement calcium. And so again, if we run into an athlete that's having a lot of stress fractures, this may be something that we want to look into. We want to add that to our vitamin D supplementation as well. Truly with stress fractures, it's more likely an energy deficiency. And so they're not getting in enough calories, which is affecting their bone metabolism. But because they're not getting enough calories, they're probably not getting enough calcium or vitamin D with those small amount of calories that they're getting. And so adding this supplementation is not a bad idea if you're running into a female athlete triad or an athlete struggling with stress fractures. And then vitamin B12. And so this is most common if you run into any vegan or vegetarian athletes. So B12 is only coming from animal sources in the diet. So if they're vegan and they've cut out all of their animal sources, their animal products, they're going to need a B12 supplementation. And so it's not very bioavailable, so you're gonna take a little bit more than kind of what's recommended. So encouraging them, if they're open to doing just dairy or if they're open to doing just eggs or just fish, you can kind of encourage that in their diet. But if not, you can try fortified cereals or nutritional yeast will have some B12 in it as well. Okay, so kind of moving into other supplements. So on the fringes of the supplements are kind of our sport foods. And so these are gonna be things like our Gatorade protein bars, or maybe if you guys have ever tried out the honey stingers or the gels or sports drinks or things like that. So these are kind of used pre and post. These are kind of those formulated foods that we talked about. So convenient sources of energy and nutrients that your athletes are going to be getting into either before or during or after. So the nice thing about these sport foods is that they typically have a nutrition facts label. So that's important because in order to have a nutrition facts label, everything in your ingredients has to be generally recognized as safe. Right? And so we'll kind of go over the differences between nutrition and supplement label in a second. And so all of these are generally recognized as safe ingredients, and we're gonna get calories and our carbs and our protein and a little bit of information on the vitamins levels. They're typically not third-party tested. So I know a lot of you guys have probably heard about the different kinds of third-party tested. Typically with our sport foods, they do not undergo third-party testing like a sports supplement would. So they may include things like whey protein in them, but they're not gonna be NSF or anything like that. For the most part, there's a few, but. So with the supplement facts label, so some of your sport foods may have a supplement facts label as well. And so that means that there are things that are not generally recognized as safe in their ingredients list. They can make health and performance claims, but of course we've all seen those huge asterisks, right, by the FDA, that this statement has not been evaluated, and so what they're saying on there is probably not really going to happen with their like get jacked supplements and things like that. And so and remember that most of our supplements are not very well regulated by the FDA, so there's very minimal level to kind of get into the supplement market, and then unless it's causing issues, the FDA is really not going to come and slap the hand of the supplement making company. So you've really got to be careful and look at ingredients lists and look for third-party testing when you're looking at the supplement label. And you can kind of see the difference between the two. So your nutrition facts label is pretty simple, pretty straightforward. And then we get to our supplement label, and we've got a lot more going on there. And so there's a lot more things to look into. Your kids are probably not paying attention to this. And so it's really important that they're bringing their supplements to you at the least, or bringing them to a dietitian to kind of help them weed through what all this means and evaluate the claims that are made on those supplements. Okay, so last thing I'm gonna do is I'm just gonna focus on a couple of the different supplements for sport that I think you guys are probably seeing, or that I'm seeing in the high schools and a little bit in college, and you guys will probably see as well. So things like protein supplements, pretty common, electrolyte replacements, creatine, and beta-alanine. And if there's any other ones at the end and you guys have questions, we can go over those too. So starting with protein supplement, most common are gonna be like our protein powders. We've got some bars, we've got some drinks and things like that. When we're looking at protein supplements, whey is gonna be our gold standard. So most of the research has been done in whey for protein supplementation for muscle growth and repair and strength and everything like that. So whey is kind of what we're looking for. If you're recommending a protein supplement, we're looking for something that's mostly 100% whey, right? If you have someone who is lactose intolerant, so they can get away with a whey isolate. So the isolate has kind of filtered out some of that lactose from just the plain whey. It'd be a little bit more expensive, but it'll be more tolerable for your athletes that aren't lactose intolerant. If they don't want to do dairy at all, kind of their next best, maybe soy. So soy protein. So I know everybody's scared that soy protein is gonna mess up your estrogen levels and things like that. It's not. It's not gonna give you man boobs. It's not gonna do anything crazy like that. It's really not a high enough level of estrogenic compounds. So soy is a phytoestrogen, but really you'd have to be consuming astronomical amounts to see any effects. So feel free, soy is safe. And that's if they're vegetarian or they prefer not to do a dairy option. In general, the recommendations for grams of protein at a meal kind of depends on your size. And so we're looking at 0.25, 0.3 to about 0.4 to 0.5 grams per kilogram per meal. So I've kind of put it up there. So with your smaller kids, 20 to 30 grams is great. Anything above that is not hurtful, but it's also not gonna be very helpful for them or, you know, give them any added benefit. If you're a little bit bigger, maybe up to 40 grams of protein at a meal. And so we're thinking about recovery shakes for the most part afterwards. And so if they're a smaller athlete, one scoop is fine. If they're, you know, a bigger athlete, they're more of a lineman, they could probably do two scoops and be okay. Beyond that, it's, again, they're wasting their money. They're just gonna be, that added protein is not going to turn into added muscle benefits. And so I think encouraging them that, no, you don't need six scoops of protein powder in your shake. You can do two and save your money. And being wary of proprietary blends. So really looking for on this ingredients list, you know, seeing the first ingredient. So this is from BiPro, so it's pretty trusted whey isolate. So we see that first ingredient is whey protein isolate. And so we know it's coming from milk. And so that's the thing a supplement label can tell us sometimes, is where the ingredient is coming from. And so whey protein isolate, we wanna be wary, we wanna look out for these proprietary blends. They're just putting that on there and they're really not telling us what's in it, okay? So we look for a protein, we wanna look for where it says 100% whey protein, 100% whey isolate, or whatever protein source that we're choosing. Okay, electrolyte replacement. So this is a pretty common one I've seen too. And so it comes in powders, it comes in electrolyte replacement drinks, can come in capsules and things like that. And so I see this really popular as kind of a remedy to cramping. So, okay, an athlete's cramping, we gotta give them some Gatorlyte, so we gotta give them some salt tabs or something like that. Truly, what we know from the research is that it's probably not an electrolyte balance that's causing them to cramp. So there may be some dehydration that leads up to it, but really giving them that electrolyte drink is not necessarily what's gonna keep them from cramping in the future. A lot of it's neuromuscular, and so I think we tend to overdo it a little bit on the sodium or on these electrolyte replacements. Don't get me wrong, you need electrolyte replacements when it's hot and you're in 2 days and things like that, but that's not necessarily what's gonna keep us from cramping. It's probably more of a conditioning thing that's gonna keep us from cramping, right? So these are still useful. I still think your players need to be, especially your football guys, once they get out there in pads, they need to be consuming some kind of electrolyte with them, whether it's after practice or after 2 days and things like that, but maybe not as much as we have been in the past. And really the electrolytes that are present in things like a Gatorade are gonna be sufficient to replace the electrolytes lost during activity. Creatine. Okay, so this is a really popular one too. Especially my male athletes really want to get big, and so they want to take creatine and get jacked. And truly, creatine works. And so there is a lot of really good science. Creatine is pretty safe too. So when taken in the right amounts and the right doses, this can be really effective. if you're working hard. And I would say that's the true caveat for creatine, is that you have to work really hard to get to the level where creatine is going to be effective for you. So creatine is a muscle energy source, and so it's going to be effective for those activities or those bursts of energy that are kind of less than 30 seconds. So in the weight room and things like that, creatine is an extra. So we are deficient in creatine technically because our animal sources of protein that we eat don't have a lot of creatine in them because they don't move around very much, right? So we think about where we get our meats and things like that. They tend to stay pretty still. And so they're not generating a lot of need for creatine in their bodies. And so therefore, when we eat it, we don't get a lot. And so the reason creatine supplementation works is because we have a little bit more of a capacity for it since we're not getting it in our diet. So eating that creatine will improve, so we'll store that in our muscles, and that'll be an added energy source, and that's going to help your athlete really push through to the next rep or get a little bit farther, a little bit heavier with their weights, and we'll see that little bit extra improvement in their adaptation or their muscle growth. So it's important to think about, if they want to do creatine, they've got to do a loading phase. So those first 5 to 7 days, so that first week, they're gonna wanna take 5 grams 4 times a day. Okay, so most of the time in the creatine supplements, they'll give you a 5 gram scoop. And so you can mix that with milk or water. It can be before or after a workout. It really doesn't matter when they're taking the creatine so much, is that it has to be consistently, right? Because we wanna maintain those stores in our muscles. A lot of times they'll do it after the workout to kind of replace what we've lost, but if you're doing it in the mornings, that's fine too. And so we do our loading phase for the first week, and then it's really maintaining. So 5 grams a day after that. And we've seen in studies, it's really safe long-term. And so, you know, you can supplement for months. A lot of times we'll cycle. A lot of people will cycle on and off of it during their training phases. It's just kind of depending on the athlete. Taking the creatine with some kind of protein and carbohydrate, they've seen in the studies have shown to help with the uptake of the creatine in the muscles. So thinking about that, making creatine as maybe part of your post-game meal is gonna help with that, you see. And then again, it is safe. And so I think a lot of people are somewhat hesitant to give creatine to their high school athletes. And I would say, yes, I am kind of in that boat too, because a lot of times there's probably a lot more we can do with their general diet before we start adding creatine into it. But if you have those really dedicated kids that are doing everything right with their diet and are really looking for an edge, creatine can be a safe option when done in the right way. And then the last one I'll talk about a little bit is beta-alanine. So we find this in powders and tablets. We find it a lot in our pre-workouts. And really the amount that it's in the pre-workout isn't enough for it to be a true buffer. And probably your kids aren't taking the pre-workout consistently enough for it to have an effect. And so we want to be taking beta-alanine consistently, right? So every day, 10 to 12 weeks is what we see in a lot of studies. And so chances are your kids probably aren't taking it that consistent enough to see that effect. But what they do probably get from beta-alanine is a little bit of jittery, right? So when we take beta-alanine, sometimes it makes people itchy. It gets them a little kind of fired up and ready to go. So that's why they put it in the pre-workout. They kind of get that jumpy feeling. And sometimes that helps. And again, that's not, it's not an unsafe thing necessarily to have. So we may find more effect in less well-trained athletes. And again, we may get that tingling. We may get a little bit of that flushed feeling with it. But again, this is something for short-term high-intensity activity. Probably not something that your high school athletes are going to be taking by itself, unless, again, these are the ones that are really dedicated, really dedicated, really hardworking athletes. And so, but you are going to find these things in pre-workouts and stuff like that. So, last thing I'll talk about is labeling. So this is kind of the most important part of looking for a safe supplement, is looking for the labeling. So this USP label, when you see this, so these are all third-party testing labels. So what that means is the company has taken their product and they've sent it off to a lab, and they have let this third-party lab evaluate what's in their product and kind of mark it as with their label. So the USP verifies that what's on the label is actually in the product, right? So just because it says it on the label on a supplement does not mean that's what's in the product. This happens a lot with herbal compounds or vitamins. It may say, you know, it's vitamin C, but you're really not getting that much vitamin C actually in the tablet or in the pill. And so with the USP label, that's kind of what you'll see most frequently on your vitamins, your vitamin supplements, and things like that. And so that's verifying that what is on the label and the amount is actually in the container. The informed choice or the informed sport is another one that are kind of the same feeling. They're gonna test for banned substances. So I know you guys in high school don't get tested quite as frequently as maybe our college athletes do, but it's still important to think about these things because the banned substances are banned for a reason because they're dangerous for the most. They can be dangerous. And so looking for this label as well as our NSF is kind of our gold standard because it's gonna do both. It's gonna tell you that what's on the label is actually in the product and that there's no banned substances in that product. So this is kind of what I direct most of my athletes to. If you go to nsfforsport.com, they'll have a really updated list of what is actually, what products are actually NSF certified. So there have been products that have put this NSF label on there without actually doing the NSF testing. So it's always good to double check on their website. That's the best way to go. So with that, I'll kind of wrap up. And then if you guys have any questions about any kind of supplements or anything I didn't cover, yeah?
Yeah, the question is about the first
part of testing. Do you have any recommendations that I would suggest? I guess, for them? Do you have two or three companies that you would feel like pharmaceutical grade supplements that you should trust without having to look at every company on the shelf? Yeah, so for the most part, generally what I recommend, so she was asking about different companies that have high quality products. So Muscle Milk is one that's NSF certified. Bipro, which I listed on there, is a good isolate. If you do have a kid that's lactose, looking for a lactose-free whey isolate product. Thorne Research, so these guys have a lot of really good, if you're looking for single kind of nutrient substances, these guys are really, really good, really high quality stuff as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So say you take a supplement, how do you know? Okay, say the supplement has what's on the label.
Yeah.
How do you know how much your body is going to absorb? Mm-hmm. If you take it with food, if you don't, how much you actually get into your system.
Yeah.
But then you go to the doctor and get a blood test to see what's in there. You know, they say, okay, you fast before you go to the doctor.
Yeah.
So you pee and clear. So maybe the stuff's not in you anyway. So how do you know really what's in you?
So, yeah, I think it really depends on the specific supplement. So with vitamins, you know, our water-soluble vitamins, it may be something where we are excreting them in our urine more frequently. With our fat-soluble vitamins, those tend to stick around in our system a little bit longer because they are stored with fat. With other nutrients and supplements and things like that, it really kind of depends on which one you're taking is, and you know, the recommended kind of, I guess, dosing schedule and things like that. And so if you're following that, you're gonna see the effect. So with the creatine, like you need to do the loading phase and then you need to be consistent every day in order to make sure that your creatine levels are full in your muscles and you're seeing that effect. With the beta alanine, right, it has to be over a long period of time. And so I think it's a matter of going and looking at the research and what they've done in the research and what their recommended kind of dosing schedule is, and that's typically when you see the effect.
Same with B12, if you take that, should be...
Right, and so B12 you should be taking consistently until you see your blood levels go up, and so we see our B12 markers in our blood go up, or we start incorporating more animal foods into our diet. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Christine, now that Texans are making a switch, can you talk very briefly about the good, the bad, the advantages, pros and cons of organic Gatorade?
Organic Gatorade, okay. So good, I guess if you're really concerned about where your sugar's coming from, great, organic Gatorade or maybe flavorings. The bad is that it's expensive for the same product. It's probably more expensive for the same thing. So what you're looking for in Gatorade is you're looking for a little bit of carbohydrate, we're looking for fluid, we're looking for electrolytes. And so those carbohydrates in regular and organic Gatorade are coming from sugars, and that's fine. There's a time and a place for Gatorade, and there's a time and a place for those more refined sugars. And so whether it's organic or not doesn't really matter. With the, you know, the electrolytes and fluid and things like that, it doesn't really matter if it's organic or not. So, yeah. I wouldn't waste your money, I guess, is my bottom line.